Distribution of E-Town is made possible by our family of sponsors, this station, and listeners like you.
Shining, the wheel feels waving, the dust clouds rolling, the fog was lifting, the voice was chanting, oh, this land was made for you and me.
This land is your land, this land is mine.
This is a production of the E-Town Radio Network.
You're listening to KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, and streaming live at coastradio.org.
Arts Live and Local is brought to you in part by Columbia River Coffee Roaster, wholesaling fresh roasted coffees since 1992 at 279 West Marine Drive, the old Finnish meat market, with Three Cups Coffee House up front, espresso, coffee, homemade baked goods, Wi-Fi, and gifts. Open every day.
Welcome to Arts Live and Local. I'm Cindy Price in for Carol Newman. It's been a month and a day since the governors of both Oregon and Washington shut down all but a few businesses in an attempt to slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus. How has the quarantine affected the arts and cultural institutions of our region? We talked with Riversea Gallery owner Janine Grafton, ceramicist Audrey Long, and visual artist Carista Trask, author Buzz Bissinger, sculptor Jeremy Furnish, and artist Darren Orange. Audrey Long calls herself a functional ceramicist, making pieces that are well thought out and utilitarian, each hand thrown and individually glazed in shapes and colors that feel good. I make vessels that you want to hold in your hand, drink your coffee from, and share with the people you love, she says. Carista Trask is a mixed media abstract artist who taught herself to paint after studying sculpture at the University of Oregon, where she produced large plaster installations that reflected her personal life experiences. They're currently collaborating on the 100-Day Art Project. We talked with Audrey and Carista at the AVA Gallery in downtown Astoria.
We're good. We got this.
Audrey Long and Carista Trask, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to have to learn your voices, so maybe to say this is Audrey, this is Carista the first time.
Yeah.
This is Audrey.
And this is Carista.
Yeah. It's too bad we're not on TV. We could easily tell you apart. But thanks for coming in. I was just down at the Astoria Visual Arts Gallery, and Audrey, you have your ceramics shop just in the same building, the Van Dusen building, and saw kids doing something. What are you doing? Tell us what you're doing.
We are participating in the annual 100 Day Project.
What is that?
Well, the 100 Day Project is eight years old now, maybe. It started on Instagram, and originally the idea of the project was that artists from all over the world who use Instagram assign themselves projects, and then they participate in those projects on a daily basis. This will be my fourth time.
For 100 days.
400 days.
So, Carista, this will be your fourth time?
Fourth time.
And this is my first time.
First time.
First year doing it.
And our project came about because, obviously, due to COVID, we're quarantined together. And we decided to both participate in the 100-Day Project. However, we chose to assign each other our projects.
And so what have you assigned each other?
So I have been assigned 100 days of small painting explorations.
Audrey, you have been.
I have been. Audrey mm-hmm. has been.
Me. By small, meaning how small?
So I'm doing index card-sized pieces every day, and I'm exploring all painting mediums, well, except for oils yet, but yeah. Acrylic, watercolor, drawing, graphite.
Anything water-soluble.
Anything water-soluble.
Well, Audrey, I know you, and I suspect most Astorians know you as a ceramicist, so is this entirely new medium to you, or going back to basics?
It's going back to a lot of basics. It's kind of re-exploring the foundations, and then it's giving me a chance to really explore some design, and it is definitely translating pretty heavily to my ceramic work at this point, because I've been unfortunately in the studio completely alone without all my students. So I've been making some really interesting new surfaced pots and some new work coming out.
That's interesting. So hopefully we will not be in lockdown for too much longer and we can see the results of this work.
Yes, absolutely. There's going to be a big unveil next week. There's going to be a sale next week, mostly through Instagram, and then that will transition to my website.
Okay,
hopefully by the end of next week.
Tell us the Instagram and website.
My Instagram is at Audrey, A-U-D-R-E-Y, loves dirt, because I love dirt.
Of course. And the website?
And the website is audreylongceramics.com.
Okay, and that'll be coming up. Well, we're talking on a weekend before this airs on a Friday, so will it be, what's the date?
The week of the 20th. There'll be a lot of changes to the website, and then there'll be some sales on the Instagram as well.
Okay, Carista, what are you doing for this project?
Audrey assigned me to create one ceramic tile per day for 100 days. So I've actually been Audrey's student for about 8 months now, and have transitioned from working on the wheel into more hand-building based projects. And so Audrey thought that it would be fun, exciting experiment for me to work in the small format of ceramic tiles.
One tile meaning sort of a square, a 4x4 or 6x6 or something?
I'm using two different sizes right now, a 4x4 and a 6x6. Mm-hmm. The first couple of days of the project were, I did a lot of surface work because obviously being an abstract painter, like that's my natural inclination. And then as we got further into quarantine, I started doing imprints of the streets in Astoria. So then the ceramic tiles imprint, and I take a picture of where it's imprinted, and then I post it on my Instagram, the tile and the place that it was printed. Just places that are important to me. Living in Astoria and that are reminiscent. And then over the next couple of weeks, because ceramics doesn't work quite like painting, you can't complete an entire painting in one day, I mean, tile in one day, I'll start playing with surface on those imprints.
Well, Audrey, you mentioned that you don't have students now since the shutdown. How and what other ways has the quarantine affected your work and your business?
Ooh-wee. Like most businesses that are not the restaurants that are still open, I don't have anybody coming in and out. I'm just waving at people through the window that are out walking their dogs and whatnot. I have been trying to keep in touch with my students, keep them active with the clay that they have at home. They have their clay supply and their tools at home. So trying to send them links to little projects and things that they could be keeping themselves active with. And then in terms of business, it's been really slow because there's nobody able to come in and buy. So that's why I'm transitioning to more web-based sales, which has been a goal for quite some time. It's just been so busy with students that I haven't had the time to do it. Mm-hmm. So now I'm just taking the opportunity to kind of shift my focus back to my own work and then back to web sales.
Well, I know that you have a generous landlord, and so that must help.
He is Glenn Herman has been wonderful as a landlord.
Is there a date at which you see things becoming perilous, or do you expect us to open up a little bit before that could ever happen?
I'm hoping that we don't get to that point. I think I'm far off. I've been actually very, very lucky with the community support. See what happens with the sales in the next couple weeks. And I think we'll be back before peril for me comes into play.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And I hope we get back into things before peril for many people come into play.
Some are already there, but too many, really. Carista, how about you? What were you doing 2 months ago that you're not doing now, and what would you be doing now if you weren't being assigned this tile project by Audrey because of the quarantine?
Well, I am one of those artists that has been hit especially hard.
Why is that?
Well, because I had just signed a deal on a $10,000 commission for a hotel 2 days before they were forced to close, and that commission has since gone away. Obviously, a hotel can't pay an artist to create artwork for the interior if it's not open. Mm-hmm. The collective that my studio was in has been forced to close due to COVID, so now I'm studio-less. And then I had a class coming up where I was going to be teaching a 6-week class, and similar to Audrey, where if you can't have students in your space, then you can't be teaching them a class, and so that income has gone away. I, however, have been lucky in that I did have 2 commissions that came up that have kept me financially afloat. I'm just trying to take the time to focus my work, to create work, because I'm doing a painting project a day as well, and then I'm doing the 100-day project, so that I'm continuously working and continuously moving forward. A lot of that, though, is, like, I am lucky enough that I coach artists for a living, so some of that income is there as well. Doing a lot of Zoom meetings, which is really enjoyable.
Carista, I didn't ask for your online presence, your addresses.
I am on Instagram at Carista, K-I-R-I-S-T-A, Trask, T-R-A-S-K. That's Carista with 2 I's. And you can find me online at carista-trask.com.
Okay. Now, both of you do have students. Have you talked with your students about how this quarantine is affecting them? How are they holding up?
Yeah, actually, I've been in contact with my students as well as Audrey has, and I'll start doing some Instagram lives next week, assigning students creative exercises that they can do while they're in quarantine. Luckily, being a painter, it's a lot easier for students to have a full setup at home and to still access a full setup. I also released at the very beginning of quarantine kind of a must-have supply list, so a lot of my students were able to order off of, online and get the supplies that they need to continue creation.
Mm-hmm. I've been in touch with a lot of my students. Some are still working, which is really great. Most are not, and it's been more like personal conversations with them.
Is there anything you can do at home?
There's definitely a lot of little hand building projects that you can do. Learning how clay works in different ways, playing with, it seems really like elementary level stuff. I just started a hand building class right before all of this ended, and we spent the first few weeks just working on like coil pots and pinch pots, like stuff that you did with Play-Doh when you were 5. But learning how clay works in that way so that when you can come back to the studio, you can kind of full force back into it.
that it's not like riding quite the lumpy bicycle that it's going to be for a lot of people. But there's so many artists on Instagram, especially right now, and Facebook, that are doing a lot of free tutorials, free videos, using your kitchen table and tools that you might have around your house. Kitchen supplies are always like the best crossover for my kind of studio tools. Mm-hmm. So most things you can work at home within a certain range.
Right. Are there any community online spots? I know I'm asking you off the top of your head. Any community spots online, either on Facebook or Instagram or just the web in general, that you could recommend that artists might want to spend some time looking at, learning from at this point?
Yes. You're looking at me.
Yeah, I would say in terms of ceramics, one really great person that's been doing a lot of stuff is Melissa Wise, W-E-I-S-S, Melissa Wise Pottery. And she's also been linking a lot of stuff, other artists that she's worked with. They've been doing great stuff. The American Craft Forum has a huge amount of links in terms of more three-dimensional items. And then... Who's that painter that you've been?
Well, Jean Oliver has a great website that has a lot of courses on it, and all of because she brings in a lot of other artists, it's everything from representational to abstract. So, and it's jeanoliver.com. So it's JeanOliver.com. I've taken some of her courses, and many of them are $15 to $20, and then you get a considerable amount of work. Right now, really what it boils down to is that a lot of artists are just getting online. They're showing, you know, how their process and what to do. So Instagram has been just the easiest place to follow along. I can also say that the Melissa Weiss clay work has been amazing. I have made some incredible things, and it's all hand-built. So if I can do it, I'm sure anybody can do it.
Well, that sounds really several interesting places to explore. Thank you so much, Carista Trask, Audrey Long, for coming in today. Good luck.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah,
this
good luck to you
program.
Both. I'm certain the community will support you as best they can. And stay safe. Stay healthy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Audrey Long is at audreylongceramics.com, and you can see her work through her gallery windows at 1010 Duane Street in Astoria. Carista Trask is at carista-trask.com. I'm Cindy Price, sitting in for Carol Newman for Arts Live and Local on Coast Community Radio. Janine Grafton opened River Sea Gallery in the heart of downtown Astoria in 1997. It was a catalyst for Astoria's reawakening and has since become the heart of Astoria's vibrant arts and culture scene. Creative and entrepreneurial, Janine's passion for artists and the arts, her eye for talent, her appreciation of historic preservation fill River Sea Gallery, the nucleus of Astoria's connections between commerce, community, and art. Janine Grafton, thanks for coming in today.
Oh, my pleasure.
I will give you a lovely introduction before we start talking here, but why don't you tell us what it is that you're doing now?
Well, currently my business, River Sea Gallery, is mandated closed as a non-essential business by the state due to the stay-at-home order. So things are really different than usual. We've been in business 23 years, and this is the strangest year ever, I would say.
Right.
It seems like an eternity ago.
And did you have any provision from that time forward to be open in any way whatsoever?
Well, right after Art Walk, which was
the middle of March.
Yeah. Right after then, that next week, we were open kind of on limited hours, but then the governor made an official order for stay at home, and our business was one of those that was not allowed to stay open. So what we've been doing, though, is staying in there one person at a time for 3 hours a day, chasing down online sales, doing social media posts, working on our website, just keeping our hand in.
Well, it's only mid-April now, and so it's probably too soon to tell, but have you noticed any change in your online sales since the mandatory shutdown?
Oh, there's fewer sales overall.
Right.
Normally we do get more online sales than we are now. People are holding on to their resources.
Right.
There are lots of sales that we had been working on that are in the uncertain territory now just due to the stock market and unemployment and all kinds of reasons. Whenever there's uncertainty, that's what happens. I've worked in the art world since the late 70s, and so I've gone through quite a few recessions, this one being the strangest. But when there's uncertainty, then people hold on tight.
So that's one trend that you see that's very similar, I would suppose, to the 2008-2009 recession, is that perhaps you had some sales in the pipeline that now you've heard from those potential customers that they want to hold off?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty normal. I guess that's the only comparison I can really make to the previous recessions. Nothing's been this uncertain.
Right. Have you been in touch with your artists?
Oh, yeah.
Who's the feature artist there now?
Oh, Brooke Borcherding. She's from Seattle, young artist. She does still lifes and landscape paintings that are shattered strokes of color, almost kaleidoscopic and just brilliant color. And we extended her show through early next month.
Right, through April. Are you intending to have a new exhibit in May?
Yes, we have Jesse Nairns. He is an artist from Portland, and his style is nature-based, expressive.
Do you have plans? What sort of plans do you have in case we can't have an art walk in the middle of May?
I don't see an art walk happening in the middle of May. And to us, the most important thing is to display the work, present the work, attract collectors. Art walk is more of a social opening, a celebratory opening for a show. It's not entirely necessary. They're fun for a lot of people. But just because we couldn't have an art walk wouldn't keep us from having a show. People who follow the artist will generally come in when they can anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, art walk does contribute to sales, but we don't have to have that. But it's really important to be open. It's much harder to sell art just online. If you haven't seen someone's work in person, it's hard to get the full impact of it, I believe. I think for me, the best example of that was seeing a Mark Rothko piece in New York. I didn't understand until I was standing in front of one of his paintings.
Was this
person.
Like one of the canvases that was just blue or something?
White, and it felt like you could just float into it.
Uh-huh.
A little different than seeing it in an art textbook or online.
Right. So you have been in touch with at least the Brooke, who is currently exhibiting. How is she doing? What does she have to say about what's going on with her during this time?
Well, she's a plein air painter, so she's been painting on site here and there, and she has a good social media presence. I think every artist that I've spoken with is basically hunkering down. A lot of them are painting. Some of them are too overwhelmed to paint or create their art. Or maybe they're getting experimental. one of our artists, Jennifer Williams, said that she is treasuring this time in her studio, and she has a gorgeous studio behind her house in the country. And she said she was preparing panels to paint on. So getting ready to be inspired by prepping.
Well, I mean, it has only been 3 weeks or so since we've been in this shutdown period, and so people are still getting used to this new life that we're living right now. And I can see how for artists it would take a while to adjust, as it's taking all of us to adjust.
Right.
And we're all experimenting with our lives in one way or another.
I think that this is such a momentous occurrence that just like 9/11, for instance, on the other side of it, we're going to see a lot of really interesting art that comes out of what people are going through now. One artist I represent, Karen Whippick, she's from Portland. She has a very personal style, narrative, figurative painting. She's been doing figures with masks on.
Yeah, I suspect we're going to see a lot of that.
A lot of art response.
And then what's behind the mask, right?
Right.
Yeah, a lot of that. Just in terms of business now, has Riversea, you may not want to reveal any of this and just say you don't, has Riversea been able to apply and successfully for SBA or PPP? Or
we haven't had any funding yet. Gone through the process. We'll see. As far as I've heard, the program's out of money, so I don't know if, I don't know what the end result will be or when.
What are your concerns and what triggers your concerns? Like, is it length of time? Is it, what is it?
All the layers involved. So my landlord's been really understanding. Like many here, my landlord is a community member and is depending on rent for part of his living expenses. So many of our landlords here are not corporate entities. They're people often living in our community who might be using the rent they collect for retirement living or for savings or to live on. And so that's just another layer. And then another layer would be not only my employees, but the suppliers I buy from, the artists I support, the other businesses here I support. We're all connected in a fragile web, especially in this little tiny community. One break in part of the web affects all of us in just exponential ways as you get farther out. I don't know how it'll be when we're able to reopen. I know there's talk of restaurants being required to take people's temperature when they come in. I don't know if that would apply to retail establishments. Right. And so as the owner of a large retail gallery, I think about people coming in who are asymptomatic and touching things, walking around. And then there's our responsibility to clean and sanitize the space. And we have a lot of things you can't really sanitize.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do you sanitize a gallery? Can you just spray, disinfectant around, and does that do it? I mean, you can't wipe paintings with disinfectant wipes.
You can dust, and you can just clean the surfaces that are cleanable.
Right.
We've talked about ways to do it. They seem kind of goofy, but uncharted territories.
There's some talk going around of having virtual art walks where galleries and businesses would put even more art than they currently have in their windows into their windows, and then have an art walk, and people are walking the street, hopefully social distancing and masked, and looking at the art through the windows. Is that something that you think would work for Astoria?
Well, we have extensive show windows now that we keep full with changing displays. So I think we always do that, and you can see well into the gallery. So there's that, and our website is extensive. And we've been posting virtual tours on Instagram and featuring different artists pretty much daily on Instagram, too.
Right.
I think that it'll take a long time for us to all get back together. This community is pretty hard hit with unemployment. Our clientele comes from all over, though mostly they're people from the West Coast. And when California, Oregon, and Washington reopen, maybe we'll see more support. I don't know how this will play out. I don't have any answers. The other recessions that I've been in business through have been different, so it's hard to know.
Yeah. Janine Grafton, owner of River Sea Gallery, thank you so much for coming in today. We wish you all the best and that you go forward in good health.
Thank you, and thanks for being here.
River Sea Gallery will remain closed until Oregon's stay-at-home order is lifted. The gallery has an extensive website allowing online sales at www.riverseagallery.com. I'm Cindy Price, sitting in for Carol Newman for Arts Live and Local on Coast Community Radio. Abstract paintings of Darren Orange are in notable collections around the world. As one collector noted, the wild sea and earth are branded deeply into the flesh of Orange's soul and canvases. His work is riveted in place, but unmoored in time. His works have been published in books, radio and TV interviews, book covers, independent film posters, an album cover, and national magazines. On one notable occasion in 2016, Darren performed live on stage at the Liberty Theater with pianist Ilya Kazanetsev and cellist Sergei Antonov as part of the Astoria Music Festival. Darren was unable to join us, but sent this email, which he agreed I could read. So this is from Darren Orange. Hardships have come and gone for me in the last 20-plus years as a practicing artist. So many times I've lost count. It's the ebb and flow nature of this lifestyle. For many years, I lived on two shifts a week, working in food service, doing gigs, practicing carpentry, selling a painting here and there, all in a depressed economic area. Resources were precious, and a network of community was important. This was really no different than the life of farming and orcharding I grew up in. All materials were saved and upcycled for new purposes and projects. You worked when you had work, and you created things to make your work life easier. I see my life making a return to this lifestyle, a lifestyle more independent, asking for less and working to create more. I will return to the studio when my mind can slow down. It's been a race against time to get prepared or keep moving or to stay busy. For what? To get prepared? Quarantine? Winter? I think my time for the studio will be this fall, a time of reflection after the harvest. There are some folks that are really inspiring me, Andy Sterling's One Work a Day, Sergei Antonov's upload of recorded material, the Quarantine Happy Hour on Facebook, and the many on social media going live or documenting their processes. Artists, more than anything, are highly adaptive, creative problem solvers. Social media live events are what I've seen with other galleries, possibly with interviews and discussion of the works. The quarantine happy hour really does impress me. It's the sense of community still reflective in the viewer's participation. You can view Darren's work on his website, darrenorange.com, and on Facebook. That's darrenorange.com. I'm Cindy Price, sitting in for Carol Newman for Arts Live and Local on Coast Community Radio. Jeremy Furnish is a multimedia visual artist and designer, often working in 3D using welding skills he learned early in life. He was selected for the Coastal Oregon Artist Residency's 2019 program in Astoria and has been commissioned to build the Regatta Monument on the Astoria waterfront next to the Columbia River Maritime Museum in honor of the boat race's 125th year this year. He co-founded the Klatskanai Bloom Gallery in 2019 and is leading the Klatskanai Mural Project to, as Jeremy puts it, restore a sense of pride in the aesthetic of our town. Jeremy has been very busy during quarantine. I look for the bigger solution in a problem, he says, and find it's been an opportunity to make something better. We talked with Jeremy at his studio in Klatskanai via Zoom.
Thank you for joining us, Jeremy Furnish.
It's nice to be here, Cindy Price.
Jeremy, you are really a very multi-talented man. I was just looking at your website this past week, and I will be giving you an introduction previous to this, but could you give us a sort of like the TV guide version of your work and how you got here to Klatskanai and the work that you're doing in Astoria as well?
Okay. I guess I started out as a child, really. I knew that I wanted to be creative for a living starting out in grade school. I just didn't know how or what. I went down a bunch of different rabbit holes. I got into muraling and pottery when I was younger, and I thought maybe that was it. And really, I entered the workforce after a couple of years at Mount Hood Community College taking their art classes. But I entered the workforce doing some bronze welding at a bronze foundry. We did Wyland bronze. And so I learned how to weld bronze sculpture and kind of got into the idea of permanence in your artwork. And seeing what you could do with metals really was for me a way to make something more permanent. So I furthered my education really, I guess, in job related experiences and kind of bounced from one place to the next, picking up things to the point where I felt like I was good enough to do my own projects. And so that was about 20 years ago. And then it was just a bit of a struggle, if you can imagine. I thought it was going to be easy, and then it wasn't. But persistence pays off, I guess, would be the moral of the story.
That's for sure, and that's true for all work, I think. When we corresponded with the original invitation to come onto KMUN for the art show, you wrote something that I thought was remarkable, which was quarantine has been fantastic. So that is really the focus of this show, is to talk to artists about how the quarantine, how the pandemic has affected them. So tell me more.
I guess one of the problems of being creative is you always have more ideas than what's realistically possible. You know, you dream way bigger than you can achieve. And I've been doing that for years. And while I'm doing that, I'm collecting things, just like, you know, at the Recology residency. I've been doing that anyways. And so if you can imagine what my place started to look like, there's plenty of projects. And I always wondered how am I going to find the time to do all of these things and work and family and garden. And so right now it's kind of like a forced vacation. You know, you get to stay home and really go down the creative rabbit hole without the anxiety of having to leave it. We can fully embrace it. And I think a lot of really good things come from letting go of what might happen in 2 hours, or where you might have to go, or that you might have to talk to somebody, or, you know, break your concentration, your creative concentration. So when you can completely go down the rabbit hole for days and weeks on end. It's just it's amazing the gratification that unravels. You actually have tangible gratification that happened very quickly. So it's kind of addictive.
Now, you opened Bloom Gallery, Klotzk and I Bloom Gallery, just after the first of the year. It hasn't been open that long, right?
It's been a year.
It's been a year. So obviously that's closed.
Well, for now, and it's we're doing some virtual thing. We're just kind of seeing what's about to happen here. We had a well-renowned doctor from the past who was actually a painter. Doc George was a really well-known doctor with all sorts of tricks up his sleeve here in Klatsk and I, and he invented the first burn cream, and he was really well-renowned, and a lot of the people in town have great memories of the strange practices that he had, which were miraculous, apparently. And so on the side, he was a painter. And so we have, I think, 52 paintings of his hanging in the gallery right now, which John and Chris Lilick did a fantastic virtual tour, a video of the history of Doc George. So we're looking at, some virtual solutions here to keep things going.
Yeah, virtual reality is getting a big kick out of this pandemic. What is the internet address to see the doctor's works?
It's on the Klatsk and I Bloom website. It's klatskandibloom.com. And it's on the front page.
Can you tell us about the piece that you've been commissioned for the regatta, and is that still going forward?
Oh yeah, it's we got in just before things got a little hairy. All of my metal is ready and done, so I'm just about ready to put this thing together. I got a life-size model, which here I know that you won't be able to hear it, but I'll show you. There's, if you can see that, that's the model.
Okay, now you have to describe it for our
describe it. It's
people on the radio.
Okay, so it's about 10 feet tall, and it's much as similar to the illustration that I provided, but it's got a big rolling wave with a circle up top, and it's going to be made from bronze and stainless steel, and give the story of regatta over the last 125 years.
And where's it going to be sited?
It's going to be on the 17th Street Finger Pier, right in front of the Coast Guard ship, adjacent to the propeller there at the museum. The Historic Landmark Commission gave us approval for that spot a few weeks back. So it looks like it's good to go. We're gonna have a few more hoops to jump through, and permits and some engineering, but it looks like the hard parts are over.
You expect that whatever happens with the regatta gatherings themselves, that piece will be installed?
I believe so. The only holdups I would imagine is if there's any delays on anything that needs to be addressed on the pier itself for maybe structural upgrades, or they're going to be doing some handrails and some improvements on the pier itself.
I think that one of the things that made the Coastal Oregon Artist Residency that you participated in last year so successful was not only the beauty of the works that you created for it, but that each work had, you were so thoughtful about the work. It wasn't a matter of scavenging for found materials that appealed to your artistic instinct somehow, but also that there was some deeper meaning behind them. And that was really, I get kind of chills just thinking about it now. It was really a beautiful, beautiful exhibit.
Well, I really appreciate that. I do put some thought into it. I think it's a matter of if you're hungry long enough, you figure out how to make it work. And really making it work for me is you got to connect some emotion somewhere. You have to make an emotional connection, whether it be humor or whatever. And for me, putting a smile on people's face when they notice the clever name, connected with work. It's the thought, like you said, and that really is a big deal. It makes work's sell easier. It puts food on the table a little easier. A little trick.
Yeah. I just want to get back to this quarantine issue just one last time. I know that because you have a gallery and you have a wide group of friends who are artists and creatives of various sorts, what are you hearing in the community about how people are doing, what the community can do to help, and if you have any, I guess it's hard to say if we have any expectations of what's next, but.
Well, I'm trying to give people a little bit of something to look forward to, something to do, some way to embrace their creative nature, maybe even if they haven't had the time before. And we're putting a $1,000 bonus on the design winner. So I'm trying to keep people's spirits up, something to look forward to, something to do now while they're restless and stuck at home, which obviously is a coincidence, but so.
Are you still accepting applications for that project? And if so, people go to
until the 15th of May, I believe that's the deadline.
Okay, and how would people find that application?
It's on the Klatskanai Bloom website, klatskanaibloom.com. There's a Klatskanai mural project button. / Klatskanai mural project. And the downloadable PDFs are on Facebook at Klatskanai mural project and on the Klatskanai artist network and the Bloom Facebook. We got it covered, I think.
So, yeah. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for being on Coast Community Radio today. I know that you will continue to be very creative and within your community and without, and I hope you and yours stay well and healthy.
All right, you too. I'm looking forward to coming back to Astoria. I missed it. It's been too long.
Find out more about the creative works of Jeremy Furnish at www.furnishcreative.com. I'm Cindy Price, sitting in for Carol Newman for Arts Live and Local on Coast Community Radio. G. Buzz Bissinger has won the Pulitzer Prize, the Livingston Award, the American Bar Association Silver Gavel Award, and the National Headliners Award, among others. He also was a Nieman Fellow at Harvard University. He is the author of the highly acclaimed nonfiction books Friday Night Lights, A Prayer for the City, Three Nights in August, Shooting Stars, and Father's Day. We talked with him at his house on the Willapa Bay in Long Beach, Washington. Buzz Bissinger, thanks for being with us today. What are you doing today that maybe you weren't doing 2 months ago? What would you be doing today that you would be doing if you weren't in quarantine?
Well, the one thing about writing a book is you're writing a book, and it's all about your own individual effort. So, I write through wind, storm, rain, and pandemics. And I've started to write a little bit. It's a book about Marines and football and World War II. So in that sense, this may sound weird. I mean, there's something nice about it because it makes me stay at home and makes me concentrate. I have to say my concentration has not been that good because it's just hard to stay really, really focused. When you know of people who have died, when you see the number of people who have died, I'm a New Yorker originally, and the, what's happened there has been unfathomable, so I'm not that focused. You know, what's our world? We're talking. What's our world going to be like a week from now, 2 weeks from now, a month from now, a year from now? And I don't think anyone knows. Where it has affected me is in doing research, because I have research to do. It's archival research, and they're all closed. I mean, one's at the U.S. Marine Corps Archives, which is at Quantico. God knows when they're going to open a military base, in a sense, to civilians. The National Archives, VMI, Virginia Military Institute. I don't know when they're going to reopen. I don't know when libraries are going to reopen. Do I have to wait in line at the National Archives? They're going to let in five people at a time? And you know, when will colleges and universities? These are all questions. I mean, who the hell knows?
And even if they were open, how comfortable would you be with flying?
I have flown more in the past 4 to 5 years than I've flown in my life. It's well over 100,000 miles a year. One of the blessed things about this, we go back and forth between Long Beach and Philadelphia, and I figured I would be here for 3 weeks and then go back to Philadelphia. My kids there, my grandkids are there. We were going to take a trip with our son Zach to Los Angeles, and I never got back because literally 2 weeks later was Corona, and I wasn't going to fly then, and I really don't want to fly now. But I think I'm thinking in June, screw it. You know, you got to live your life, and you do the best you can, and you wear a mask. But you know, we have to get this back to some semblance of sanity. And fortunately, Philadelphia has not been hit as hard, certainly as New York or Boston, or Boston's about the same, certainly not as bad as New Orleans, certainly not as bad as Detroit. Now, I say that, but you know, I have two wonderful little grandkids, and they may not want to see me because they don't want to get it, and their parents don't want to get it. I mean, it's the trickle down and the impact. I mean, I think about it, you know, the way businesses are going to be affected is just mind-boggling.
What do you think about the differences between being here versus if you had been stuck, for lack of a better word, in Philadelphia?
I mean, Lisa and I have talked about this. I mean, I think if you're going to be anywhere, I would say, and I think I could give a reasonable argument, that a Pacific County in Washington State, in Long Beach, Washington, could be the best place to be. I think there have been two cases. I think one of the cases actually, he wasn't living in the county, but is from here. We have a wonderful house. We have property. We're lucky to have it. So the dogs can go out. We can walk. We did go to the beach. The Pacific, there was no one there. It was absolutely beautiful. It was like, hey, this is our swimming pool. This is our backyard. People are being careful, but people here are polite and friendly. So all the stores that we care about, you know, the only store I really care about is Dennis and Company. In my next life, I want to work there. But that's been open. SIDS has been open. We've done, you know, takeout. And, you know, it's an incredibly beautiful place. And we wake up every day, as you do, and you're seeing the Columbia, and we're seeing Willapa Bay, you know, and the hills. You know, what's bad about that? And I think if we were in Philadelphia, we would be stuck. You'd be much more stuck and much more confined to an apartment. We live in an apartment building. There are a lot of elderly people. Obviously, they're very, very concerned. There have been a lot of restrictions. I would not, even when I was there, I would not be seeing my sons, and I would not be seeing the grandkids. So I think in that respect, we sort of lucked out. We miss the kids and grandkids like crazy, but we're not going to do anything foolish.
Right. So I know you have a foot not only in the publishing world, but also in Hollywood and movies and television, from your work early on, Friday Night Lights, which was made into a movie and then a TV show, and also you were a writer for L.A. Law?
NYPD Blue.
Blue.
Right.
So, and I know that you have friends in all of these businesses. How's it going out
in
the world?
Well, I mean, you know, you asked originally, how am I directly affected? I am lucky to be a client at a wonderful agency, WME, known as Endeavor, and they're struggling, and I'm not talking out of school. This is a public record. They diversified very quickly. They had brilliant management, but they took on a lot of debt. And I didn't even really think about this. A lot of their income comes from live events, like Wimbledon, which they own, like the New York Fashion Show, which they own, like the UFC, the United Boxing Federation, which they own. And they're, a lot of analysts think they're in trouble. And so what happens to me? They represent me mostly on the book side because they took over William Morris. Are they going to spin that off? You know, these are all questions. My cousin Pete Berg is a wonderful film director, Friday Night Lights, Deepwater Horizon, Lone Survivor. And we talk, and I say, well, Pete, what about the movie business? And he said, I think we'll be okay, but I think what's going to happen is, you know, we have these 350-person crews. And he was frank. He said, a lot of them just don't do very much. I think they're going to slim down crews. I think crews are going to be much smaller. And I think that our movie theaters dead? Do you want to go to a movie theater? Do you want to sit in the dark, not knowing who's next to you or what they have or may not have? Not because it's their fault, but because of the nature of the virus. One thing, what would we be without Netflix? I mean, I think Lisa and I would have killed each other long ago. So I think there's going to be more of a push than ever towards streaming. And I am convinced there's some businesses that will never come back. Your husband was talking about Corona beer, which I happen to really like. Done. You know, they lost 35 to 40% of the business. It's out of their control, and they're done. They've canceled it. As I say, movie theaters, what's going to happen there? Personally, Barnes & Noble was not doing very well to begin with, but it has a toehold in the book business. Is that going to make it? It's not open now. What's going to happen to Barnes & Noble's? There's been a kind of push of independent bookstores. A lot of independent bookstores, new ones have opened. It's been very favorable to publishing. But these are small businesses. And how long can you go without customers? The good news is the book business is held pretty firm. You know, people, one of the good benefits of this is I think people realize, you know what? I can't watch TV all the time, so maybe I'll buy a book. So electronic books are up. I hear fiction is up. Nonfiction is down a little bit. My publisher is HarperCollins, and knock on wood, they're a big publisher. But what can happen is, you know, books that have been scheduled for next fall are being pushed back and being pushed back. So actually that's good for me because I've been diddling around a lot, and maybe I'll get some more time to write.
So do you think, is HarperCollins, would they take on a new book today? Or?
Well, that's a great question. The answer, I think, is no.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be perfectly honest, what I worry about is, I mean, you know, because of my track record, I got a healthy advance. And are they going to say, you know what, our business is down. We don't want to pay it. You know, so either we'll pay you off or we're not going to publish the book. I mean, these are the questions no one knows. And the X factor is, when, if ever, will we return to normal? I'm not a doctor. I think it may be until we get a vaccine. And, you know, that's a long time. I know from doing research, you know, one of the great inventions of World War II, perhaps the most important invention, was DDT.
Why do you say that?
DDT cured malaria. At a certain point, the rate of casualties from malaria was double to triple the rate of casualties in combat. It was the miracle. It was the great miracle because it killed the mosquitoes. And as we know, it was a miracle until it was discovered that it was incredibly toxic and dangerous. So we have to be careful what we wish for. So, you know, vaccines, contrary to the president, are not discovered in a day or a week or a month or 2 months. They have side effects. But until there is something that we believe in as a nation, it's going to be rough. Why we can't get testing, I don't really know. I don't really understand why it's been so screwed up. I really, really don't. Because some countries like Germany, I understand in England, can even do a mail-in test, which makes sense because that's the way they do a lot of tests today. But we have a long way to go. So we'll just hang out and watch the sunrise and the sunset and the bay and the hills. And we feed our two little crows every day. They're getting to know us. So, you know, life's not that bad. I like social isolation anyway. I believe in it.
Yeah.
My son, Caleb, is an associate producer at Wondery, which is a very good producer of podcasts. And, you know, they're affected. And anyone, the good thing about authors, we do work at home.
Yeah.
We work in isolation. We're used not to having any friends. We're used to being entity unto ourselves. So our work does go on. As I say, the research is affected. But when you write, We do have certain outlets like podcasts, like social media. You know, it's not like the film business, because some say, what's going to happen? Our movie theater is going to close. Books are still going to be around. And as I say, there's some positive signs that actually sales have come up. And it would be great if people during this period rediscover a lot of things about themselves, including the wonders of reading a book, you know, because we have time. So right. Stop watching Netflix. I'll make a deal with all of you. I'll make a pact. If you don't watch Netflix, I won't watch Netflix, and we'll all read a book together because there's still wonderful things.
Thank you, Buzz Bissinger, for joining us on Coast Community Radio.
Oh, you're welcome. My favorite station in the universe, so it was a pleasure.
More about Buzz Bissinger at www.buzzbissinger.com. Many thanks to Darren Orange, Janine Grafton, Jeremy Furnish, Carista Trask, Audrey Long, and Buzz Bissinger for contributing to Arts Live and Local this week. Also thanks to Astoria Visual Arts for allowing us to use their gallery for some recording, to Ray Merritt for his help with engineering, to Carol Newman for asking me to guest host this week, and to you, dear listener, for your support for Coast Community Radio. I'm Cindy Price. Be safe. Be well.
This is Patty from Soul Serenade wishing KMUN a happy 37th birthday. We've been bringing on the radio love since April 17th, 1983. In these difficult times, it's reassuring to know you can depend on KMUN. So, we're asking our listeners to help us celebrate by showing your monetary love. Please hit that red donate button at coastradio.org or send a birthday check to KMUN, P.O. Box 269, Astoria, Oregon, 97103. All donations receive the gift of membership.
And this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, and streaming live at coastradio.org.
From KCRW, this is Left, Right, and Center.
President Trump says he strongly disagrees with Georgia Governor Brian Kemp's decision to open his state up so soon. That's after the president sided with anti-closure protesters who want Minnesota and Michigan reopened. So the president is against staying closed and he's against reopening. Who is this message supposed to please? Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Josh Barrow. Later in the show, Sam Brand.